Okay, Google, find me a podcast about War Machine and Hordes, please.
All right, I have a podcast ready to go. Let's start with Tangential with Sung Su.
Okay, Google, do you have any more information about the podcast?
It's a War Machine and Hordes podcast whose goal is to educate, inspire, and entertain.
Okay, Google, play Tangential with Sung Su.
Today, we're joined by Dan Yun. We talk about his experiences with the WTC, taking the game more seriously, and we dive into the new Circle CID. I've got a ton of content in the works. You can follow me on Facebook at CO Wargaming, and you can also find me on Twitter at Sung Su, TSEUNGTSU, to ensure you stay up to date. Without further delay, here's that conversation with Dan. On the line now, we have a man who needs no introduction. He's cast more Pillars of Salt than Sodom and Gomorrah. Dan, sometimes I just go by Moshar Yun. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great this afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for coming on the pod. I know you was a Circle snowflake, but for the listeners who might not be as familiar with you, would you mind taking a minute and introducing yourself?
Sure, yeah. So I'm Dan Yont. Used to be one of the hosts on a previous Circle podcast, The Ley Line. Some of the other hosts on that you might be familiar with are all on Line of Sight now. Was also one of the Circle players on the US WTC teams for the last couple years. Now I am a turncoat Legion player for the time being.
But hopefully this Circle CID is enough to bring you back. So yeah, one of the things I've loved the most about Mark III is just how quickly the meta has kind of iterated and changed it on itself. And I'm looking forward to see how that changes in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. One part that's interesting about WTC is, so you know, I played, both my WTCs were in Mark III, but even in Mark II, I partook in a lot of the kind of like the matchup dojoing beforehand of, like, you know, you look at your team, you look at their team, and then kind of dojo out where if I drop them, what are they going to be dropping, this or that, to try to make sure that you're getting your good matchups. And as you might recall, like in Mark II, I feel like a lot of War Machine was kind of like solved, right? Where like you see their pair and you know, like if we put Haley 2 out, they're going to play, you know, one of these three players, because only one of those three players have a Haley 2 drop. You know, same with, you know, oh, only one of those people can handle Scar. And so like it was kind of predictable. And so that part of the kind of preparation process I really liked. But what we found in Mark III is just like people's expectations on what is good into stuff just varies so hard from player to player. And like with what stuff they're bringing, you know, we dojoed for like days and days and weeks for the first Mark II WTC. And just like none of the matchups went as we expected them to. And not in negative ways, like we all felt happy with our matchups, but like so did our opponents. And same with that first ETC, like we'd draft something up and be like, man, we totally stomped them in the draft. And our opponents were thinking that too. So I feel like Mark III is like a lot less solved. And part of it is just because like there's so much new stuff and so much stuff developing that like people are seeing new things a lot more at tournaments, or stuff that they don't have tons of practice against. Which I think is probably a good thing. It does kind of benefit teams that can boot camp and just grind out games all the time, like I mentioned. I know for the first WTC I went to, Germany apparently, like the month beforehand, like before they go to work, they'd all meet up for like 2-3 hours and play games in the morning. And then they would meet after work for 2-3 hours and play a lot. And so that's kind of the disadvantage that the US has at WTC, is it's hard to have like a group of players that can play games together really consistently. And so I think that's part of the reason why like Canada has been more successful, right? Because all their metas are kind of like clusters, while the US is just so much more spread.
Absolutely, Dan. And while we're on the subject, do you have any advice to someone who's maybe eyeballing the WTC? Like, what are the steps they should take to be considered for the WTC selection?
So definitely just getting out at cons. And you don't need to be necessarily winning them, but you just need to be performing at them. because one thing they want to just see is like performance, right? If you're able to say like, I've done really well at like all these cons, I obviously, you'd be surprised, but just the fact that you're able to demonstrate like I have the means to actually go to WTC can mean a lot, because like every single year there's like one player, it's a serious concern of like, are they going to drop out, or are they maybe even do drop out because of financial reasons? I know that's definitely something that I would have considered if I was going and looking at all these players, like if I was a captain and I was drafting people, of like, do I know this for this guy, like money isn't an issue? Because like WTC is like a big expense. So definitely that, like traveling a lot, like I said, helps demonstrate you have the means to travel. Obviously demonstrates that you're like really into grinding out games and, you know, the competitive side of things. Probably also just like meeting lots of people, right? People are also wanting to pick players that are like going to help represent the country. And so they want to also pick players that are like known players. Because the way the drafting process works is everyone goes and votes for a person, and that person then goes and picks people to be on their team. And so like if a captain doesn't know you, he may not pick you. So I do think just getting out and playing a lot is important.
Awesome. And was WTC worth it? All that money, all that time, everything considered?
I guess it depends on if you are willing to, or not willing, but if you're interested in traveling beyond it. If you're just going out just for WTC, questionably worth it, because it's one weekend and that's a lot of money. But otherwise, like each year I've gone, it was at least like a week or 2 weeks of just traveling around Europe. And so that definitely made it worth it, because then, you know, you have this great vacation, then you kind of get to end it on this high of playing at WTC and, you know, meeting all the people and all that.
I think we have a mutual friend who in Ireland. And I remember poking Ireland going, hey, man, how's your WTC going? And I believe his exact reply was, I'm in Amsterdam. I left my army somewhere, but things are going great.
Sounds like him.
Yeah, I think someone had to mail it back to the States for him.
Yes, yeah, I think I heard that. I actually had left my bag on a train after WTC. Basically, right before I left for a trip, one of my bosses was like, oh, you're going to be in Europe for 3 weeks? What if we just went and like visited a bunch of like our colleagues and customers for like a week afterwards as a road trip? And I was like, yeah, sure, sounds cool. You know, why not? And so I was supposed to go and grab a train or grab a flight the day after the flight over to Sweden, but I had overslept because I was just up way too late, you know, drinking and doing whatever. And so I missed it. And so I was like rushing around trying to get on a train to meet them to where they're going to be next. And I left a bag on the train. But luckily I knew where the train was going. It was going to Bruges, and Brian happened to be in Bruges that day. And so he was able to go and pick up the bag at the station.
That is quite the lookout you had there, Dan.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately I had actually played with the Belgian team at like a practice weekend they had before WTC. And so I had some backup Belgians that would have been able to pick it up as
well. It's the good old War Machine networking you had going for you.
Yeah.
What's it like playing someone whose native language isn't English?
For the most part, I don't think it makes too much of a difference, because one thing you have to remember is a lot of players also play people from other countries, and so they kind of have to go and be able to speak some level of English. I think also the rules are only translated into a fair amount of languages. They're not, I think it's probably only like 3-4 languages they're actually translated in. For the most part, I never had any issues understanding anybody. If anything, it's just because it's so loud in there. I would recommend though to, because I had mentioned that I had done a practice weekend with the Belgians, and it actually totally backfired me, because we ended up playing them during the tournament, and I actually ended up being matched against a guy that I had practiced against there. And when we practiced, he was super confident, and he had this P. Gorshade like Jack spam list, and he was super confident in the dropping it into my Wormwood. He's like, I've never lost a game with this. I totally crushed the locals playing this, and he just got stomped. And so when we ended up facing each other at WTC, he definitely didn't play that list.
Yeah, I've heard that from some other WTC players where they're like, I don't know how many podcasts I want to go on because I want to keep some of this tech kind of to myself. But it's an interesting world we live in, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I've thought about that as well. Like beforehand, I didn't want to go and talk too much about what I was doing. And I think a lot of players are like that, right? You don't want to be talking too much of like, I think this is super good into such and such matchup, because the teams that are going to grind those games are just going to go and look at that matchup. You know, if you're JVM and you're like, I have this list that totally stomps Nine Slayers. If you're a Nine Slayers player, you're going to be like, let's see what happens. And you're going to play that a bunch and you'll know one way or another compared to, you know, it's one of those things where you can catch them with their pants down where they think it's super advantageous and it turns out it's not. That was kind of the benefit of Mosar when I went to ATC the first year. That was the year that Florida meta got second place. And Florida meta like took it super seriously. They were grinding like weeks ahead. They're like, we looked at all the top teams. We played all of your against all your lists at least like a dozen times to get a feel for like what they are and what they do. They're like, except for that Mosar list, because we didn't know what they did. Like, we don't really know what that does, so we just hoped for the best.
Were you able to get the win in that final round? I don't remember. I know Ireland won. Trevi lost.
I won the one. Both Kurt and I were playing Wormwood, and I got the Wormwood win.
Funny story. So I was at that ATC, and that's actually when I decided to try to get better at the game. I actually played Mike in round 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was actually the tournament where I'm like, okay, Mike was a big, you know, big name, Michael Ireland. He's a larger-than-life personality. And don't get me wrong, Mike thoroughly beat me, but I felt like I was in the game, right? I just made a couple mistakes. And then the rest of that year, I'm like, I'm just going to try to get as good as I can locally. And then this year, obviously, I started traveling. So that's actually the ATC where I decided I wanted to, quote unquote, get good at this game. And all because I'm like Ireland.
And what were you playing? Were you playing?
Oh, no, I was Kator super janky. I was Scavarus out of theme.
Oh, my God.
Hey, I had an assassination run on Mike. It was like, I'm not going to tell you the odds. It was possibly double digits. But it was an interesting list.
Gosh, the good old days when Retribution was overpowered and everyone was terrified of Defenders.
Oh man, I just remember Mike playing the stupid Helena Forges list, and it was just so damn obnoxious.
It's really interesting how things change, right? Because like Theme Machine was out in force at that time, right? And so like there was Helena Forges, there was like the Halberdier spam, there was all that stuff, and it was considered to be like super strong, right? Even like, you know, Virus 2 with all the shield guards was like super strong, and then Red just kind of like fell off the map.
Yeah, and there's CIDs coming up. Mike's actually agreed to come in the pod and talk about it, so I'm excited to talk to him. And I will not credit him with me taking the game seriously, but that is actually what happened. So just don't tell Ireland.
What steps have you taken to take it more seriously, would you say?
Like,
what's the difference between, you know,
no, that's a great
here and, you know, a year or two ago?
That's a great question. One is volumes of games have increased a little bit. I am a father. I have 3 daughters, so I don't play as much as a lot of players, but I'm definitely striving for about 5 to 6 games a week. And more importantly, I'm shooting for about 20 to 25 games a month. I document the games I play, the list I play, the scenario, how it played out. I stopped being quite as snowflakey. I'll still play things a little off the beaten path, but Scavarus out of theme kind of had to fall away. And one of the other things is I try to educate myself more. I try to be more aware of the national meta, more aware of lists like Mosar, for example, so I'm not caught completely with my pants down when I run into it at an event. And lastly, I focus less on, don't get me wrong, I want to do well, but I focus less on winning local games and local events, and more on testing things, proving out theories,
right,
and just gaining confidence for when I go to a national event, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I'm similar. So I live in Tucson, which is about like an hour. It's an hour and a half from Phoenix on a good day, but Friday it's like 2.5 hours. So like in my local meta is pretty casual. And so I mostly just bring stuff to kind of test it out in theorycraft, see how it feels on the table. And then when I go to Phoenix, that's when I'm going there for kind of like competitive play.
How does 2018 compare to 2017 for you? I imagine it's a lot more relaxed. How different is it to not have WTC looming over you?
Yeah, it's definitely way more relaxed. I wouldn't say WTC was necessarily looming over me around this time either. Because I guess at this point last year, I had only been playing Mosar for probably like 2-3 months. So I was still kind of riding high on, you know, this really fun caster I was enjoying. So I don't think WTC really loomed that far ahead of me until probably like the month or two before. But 2018 is definitely a lot more chill for me. You know, playing a different faction, it's kind of fun to just, you know, dive into all the new stuff that you get to experience when playing a new faction.
Yeah, so recently, as you said, you were seduced by the Blight. What made you leave Circle for the greener pastures of Legion?
So I've been playing Circle constantly for probably about 4 years up until this past year. And so part of it was just kind of getting burnt out and looking for something else to be kind of fun to play in the meantime. And one of my buddies had recently left the game and was sitting on a giant Legion army. And so it was a pretty opportune moment to just pick up pretty much the whole faction in one fell swoop.
Oh, did you pick up Brian's Legion?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so it's all beautifully painted as well.
It's definitely convenient. So with that in mind, what are the things discussed at this year's Lock and Load? Was the upcoming Circle ID? It's obviously being long heralded. The Circle Facebook group is infamous for reasons I'd rather not go into. So I guess we'll go a little out of order of this, but did you think the proposed changes were enough to bring you back to Circle?
You know, it's interesting because for me, both in Mark II and in Mark III, I was never a person that played Tharn too much. They're just not really the type of models that I'm into. And I'm really all about playing lists or playing casters that I'm kind of really excited about and into playing. Part of that is also because if you're really into the list you're playing and really into your casters, then you can play them for a really long time, get lots of games in with them. And so you just get really, I think, top notch with those casters or lists. And so I had never really played Tharn. And so for me, the Tharn aren't as exciting, but pretty much everything else that is part of this Circle CID that's been announced is pretty exciting, I think, for me. And there's a decent amount in this that isn't Tharn related. So, you know, I'll have to see the rules as released, but certainly could make me take another look at Circle and maybe start playing again.
Okay, so without further ado, let's go ahead and go over these CID. Before we dive into it, though, these are rules that are being proposed. For those of you who aren't familiar with the CID process, rules are proposed. They're playtested over a series of weeks. They're pivoted and worked on. So the rules we're talking about are just, like I said, the rules that were mentioned to be proposed. They might not even necessarily represent the first iteration of the rules in the CID. I just know there's a lot of hype about it. Dan was excited about it, and I was happy to have him on the pod. So first up, we have Morvana 1. Harvest and Regrowth cost 2. Regrowth mediums come back at a single box. And the feat, the AoE, POW 13, and we heal D3 on friendly. And unfortunately, there's no more forest. So how do we feel about Morvana?
So, I mean, both of the upkeep cost reductions are definitely really nice quality of life changes. Previously, Morvana pretty much couldn't get all of her upkeeps out in one turn. And if you're having to maybe even start regrowing on your second turn, it can be almost impossible to get that third upkeep out for the rest of the game. So that's kind of just a really nice quality of life change. For similar reasons, it was also really hard to cycle regrowth between units because it used to cost 4. So it's like you're spending almost your entire stack just to get one spell onto a different unit. So those are real nice changes. The regrow medium box, medium bases at one box is really interesting when we look at kind of the Brennos is coming up as well, when we can talk about him, but he provides some healing units like Skinwalkers will heal once they activate as well. And then she also has a feat that heals friendly models. So you can potentially go and regrow medium bases and have them, you know, 5 boxes, 8 boxes within the exact same turn.
Awesome. So there's a lot more depth to the regrowth on medium models than it necessarily looks like at first glance.
Yeah, because at the first glance, it looks like, okay, you're just bringing back 1 box and maybe with just kind of like the other type of regrowth effects in the game. Oftentimes, those medium bases just kind of just get one shot immediately. But there's a lot of potential for you to bring back these medium base models and for them to be full health by the time it's your opponent's turn.
Very cool. That definitely sounds annoying on the table. So next up was Morvana 2. Gorgeous model, and she was pretty amazing at Mark 2, and she kind of lost a lot of her luster. So the changes, if I'm not missing anything, her melee range has increased to 2 inches. I think that's a pretty minor change, but definitely worth noting. Blood Sacrifice changed to no attacks, but can star action. Scales of Fate was pushed out from command to control, which is gigantic. Carnivore allows for corpse collection, and Sensor cannot be reduced with focus or transfers. Does that pretty much sum up her changes?
Yeah, I think that's just about all of them that that they had mentioned.
And where do we think she falls in now?
Obviously, the Scales of Fate really helps push her back to kind of what her original design was. Currently, you can't really run her outside of kind of like weird gun lines just because her control is so small. So the Scales of Fate going back to control really helps her run a melee army, which synergizes with her Carnivore and outgiving corpse collection, which again helps her kind of run those Tharn infantry or solos just kind of that much better. Sensor had a pretty nice change where previously you could go and reduce any damage you took with the focus. So like even if you had 3 upkeeps, take 6 damage from those 3d3, you could just reduce it with a focus and only take 1 point. But now that you can't reduce it, it's actually kind of risky because you have to think like, am I really willing to take possibly like 9 damage right now just to upkeep this stuff? And especially with like junior war casters or things like that, you can start wearing them down turn after turn if they're taking these 3D damage rolls. While it's not purification, I think it can effectively still accomplish that. Because even if they are willing to take that, you know, 1d3 damage, you know, a turn or two, eventually over the course of the game, you're going to be able to start stripping those upkeeps when they don't really feel like taking that damage anymore.
No, that's a great point. And with all the zero level warcasters coming out, it's even more important to have some counter plays to those otherwise overpowered war machine models. Is the Carnivore change, is that big? I don't really understand Tharn enough to gather how much of an increase that is.
So for most of the Tharn, I shouldn't say most, for the medium base Tharn, whenever they go and they kill a model, they'll get a corpse token and then they can use that to like buy or boost attacks. The main difference with Carnivore previously is it would RFP before they could collect the corpse. Now the main difference is now they can actually collect it.
So it's just a flat quality of life change for corpse collection while using the Carnivore spell?
Exactly, yeah, because I believe the way Carnivore works is they RFP it and then Morvana heals. And now it allows them to, I guess, collect the corpse before Morvana heals.
Awesome. That's interesting. I know I have some locals looking at Morvana too. I'm excited to see her on the table more, even if it means I might lose more games.
Yeah, because I guess before it was a bit anti-synergistic because you didn't really want to be casting as Carnivore if you were running lots of Tharn.
Makes perfect sense. You're excited about either one of them? Which one of them looks more appealing to me? Morvana 2 for me looks more interesting, but I'm just the amateur.
I actually find them both pretty interesting. Like I said, I think the Morvana 1 with all the kind of regrowth and healing stuff, I think that interests me a lot, especially with like Skinwalkers because they have those 8 boxes and they can get pretty beefy. And so if you bring them all back, it's kind of like the Morvana 2 feat, right? Part of what's really ball busting about Morvana 2's feat is you go and you kill off all these models and then she brings back all these just super heavy models in really just inconvenient places. You know, if you're playing a bunch of trenchers and suddenly a bunch of full health skinwalkers are in the middle of all your trencher long gunners or stuff, it can be really hard to remove those for the rest of the game.
Awesome. And it would be great to see skinwalkers back in the table. There really are some gorgeous models. Those are the only casters they tweaked. They did also leak a new caster, and I apologize. I think I pronounced this right. I believe it's Iona.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I've heard as well.
She's a Fury 7 Elite Cadre Dodge. She has broadsides for melee attacks on battle group, which is really interesting, like a super jackhammer, I guess. Hunter's Mark, Surefoot, Phantasm, Pursuit. She's speed 7 stealth, excuse me. And her feat is plus 3 strength and arm, and you can reroll attack rolls for Tharn. Did I miss anything with her?
No, I think that's just about all of it.
So on paper, she sounds amazing. The feat alone for Tharn seems to solve so many problems for them. What did you think of her?
Yeah, I think she's going to run Tharn models, you know, obviously extremely, extremely well, even outside of the plus 3 strength and arm for the Tharn. Just having Phantom Pursuit, for those that don't know, Phantom Pursuit is minus 5 range for ranged attacks targeting you. And so, like, it's really going to be hard to shoot, like, a unit of Tharn Ravagers. If she's running 2, she can put Surefoot on the other unit, which is a plus 2 defense at the dock down. And the cool thing about Tharn is, like, if they're in a forest, they're plus 2 defense against melee. And so if you have Surefoot and they're in a forest, they're def 18, chilling in this forest, tough, no knockdown, quite difficult unit to actually remove from that area.
Absolutely. I'm getting Maddie 1 champion flashbacks just thinking about it. Elite Cadre Dodge is hard for me to quantify. It's Elite Cadre Tharn, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes, I believe so. And I mean, that also still goes back into what I was just mentioning with the really high defense, because you could be trying to shoot or punch these really high defense Tharn, and if they're just dodging out of the way, and suddenly it's really hard to actually land any blows on them.
So it sounds like she also got a signature spell, Broadside for melee attacks. So what I'm assuming that is she casts a spell and everyone in her battle group can immediately make a melee attack. Some clear synergies there, obviously, with the Stalker. Berserk can still trigger out of activation, helps you clear off chafe and jamming units. I don't know if it's going to be limited the amount of time she can cast it, but on paper, it sounds like a super jackhammer. What did you think of this?
I think it's really cool. Like you said, you can go and get a lot of randomly big attacks like Berserk. You can even do some pretty cute stuff like have a Wildwrath run and broadside something to knock it down and have all your other stuff go and start attacking it. So I think there's a lot of really kind of cool synergy you can do here.
That's fair. So was there anything else about Iona that jumped off the page on you?
Not specifically. I feel like she's fairly straightforward in what she does. And which is just like turn Tharn up to, you know, 11. She's going to make them just really hard to actually land attacks on. And she can deliver them really well with both the strength and arm buffs. You know, if you think about even blood trackers, because they benefit from the strength buff, you know, they could be potentially throwing POW 14 spears at stuff.
No, it's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. I forgot that they are thrown weapons. Do you think she's going to replace other casters? Is she going to be the de facto caster for them?
No, I think it all depends on how many Tharn you want to be running. I think if you're running like lots and lots of Tharn, then she's obviously good because she's a force multiplier. But if you're running maybe one or two units, then I think there's definitely arguments to be running other casters that can, you know, benefit the rest of the army as a whole. Since all of her stuff is so Tharn specific, obviously, her Elite Cadre only affects them. You know, her feet only affects them. And so unless you're running lots and lots of Tharn, that's a fair amount that isn't affecting the rest of your army.
It's very fair. So they announced 2 other models. We don't have nearly enough information to have anything that resembles a intelligent opinion on them. But real quickly, they announced the Well of Orbros, which was a very interesting well, like something that pulls water out of the earth. 1 per game summons any 6-point or less solo onto the field from outside the game, any circle, and you don't need to designate it, and it can violate field allowance. Did we miss anything about the well?
That, and it has a gun where when it kills a model, you can give its corpse to a friendly model. So it kind of helps with corpse collection for your own models.
Awesome. So we have a ranged corpse collection and like a deep strike teleportation of solos. Any solos that come to mind? I mean, the Black Clad coming in with the spray seems amazing. Also, depending on how they rule, being able to take solos from other themes seems really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a fair point. Yeah, assuming it's any, since it's any circle solo, you now can bring Blackclads, you can now bring Stone Shapers, you can bring even like the Tharn White Mane. I think there's a lot of really diverse options that it can bring in, which are really cool. I know there is also a third rule that was pretty ambiguous, but they said that it has some sort of Wold support ability as well. But I think the Well of Orbis was probably the thing that intrigued me the most about all the releases, just because of the versatility that it can bring you in any match. I think it's going to really need to depend on whether that teleported in model can actually activate or not. Because if you think about it, being able to go and like pop out a Blackclad at Hunter's Marks, pop out a White Mane, it just goes ham on their army. Like that sort of stuff can be super powerful. And so I think it's going to really come down to A, what its point cost is, and B, whether or not they can activate. Because you have to imagine that it has to be a fairly high point cost, because it's effectively like 6 points less than whatever it is. Because now you don't have to bring that Blackclad in your army if you just think like, well, I'm just going to summon one anyways, so now I can have that 4 points be something else.
No, the flexibility of it alone was really appealing to me. As someone who abused and crutched on ADR as much as I could, I'm definitely going to miss that sideboard. And while not as open, it definitely gives you some options to be reactive during a game.
Yeah, so a lot of the rules are pretty vague at the moment, but for what's been kind of spoiled, I think I'm probably most excited about the Well to see what this turns into.
So next up we have a character Tharn Twins unit. I'm going to butcher this enunciation. I believe it's Brigid and Call. It's a character unit, combat experts. They have a multitude of rules here. I believe they have Prey, Gang, Quick Work, Tree Walker, Countercharge, and Heart Eater. And the other one has Prey, Gang, and Quick Work. I also believe they were Weapon Master on the range attack. So what do we think about them? Where do they fit in?
So they remind me a little bit of the other Tharn character unit that we have, which honestly isn't used that much. So I think at the moment they have a lot of cool abilities, but I think I really need to see the stat line to get a good idea of what they are. Because while they have like Prey and some Weapon Master attacks, if it turns out, you know, it's this Palanine Weapon Master Spear or stuff like that, where they're really only good at killing other infantry, we still might not see that much play since we already have a lot of kind of solos and character units. So I think it's probably too early to get a good idea of how I feel about them.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm always a little nervous with a small unit that's mixed. One model normally wants to be more of a range presence. The other wants to be more in melee. It's normally hard to get value out of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think looking at the picture, one of them appears to have like a bow. And so that's a good point. If one dude is just super good at charging in and killing dudes while the other one is someone that really just kind of wants to be sitting back and shooting, that can be like some anti-synergy that you have to deal with.
Absolutely. One of the other models they announced that's new was the Tharn Blood Shaman. We don't have a lot of information. Definitely looks like a her. Spell-based Warcaster attachment, Battle Wizard, and Harmonious Exaltation. Is there a spot in Circle for her?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Harmonious Exaltation is, of course, welcome with pretty much any caster. You know, E. Kruger could potentially go and cast TK now four times. I'm sure there's a bunch of other interactions where you get, you know, one additional time that you're able to cast this spell you have. So I definitely think there's a good space for her, especially since she has Battle Wizard. She probably has some cool nuke or something or other. So yeah, I could see her worth taking. She's kind of comparable to, say, the Druid Wilder, where she saves you a focus, but she's more oriented towards combat warlocks, while the Wilder is more oriented towards like upkeep warlocks.
Okay, and the last new model they released, and I am sorry, I'm going to butcher this name, is the Tharn Bloodweaver Haruspex. Haruspex. Again, I'm sorry. Someone out there will flame me on Twitter. I can't pronounce that. But it's an offensive command attachment, granted divine inspiration, and tactics sacred ward. What do we think of this, Dan?
I think she could be a pretty cool attachment for the Bloodweavers, especially when you think that you'll probably have like a Night Witch running around. I believe Divine Inspiration is kind of like science importance for a unit. And so when they have Killing Spree and Signs Importance, you can definitely imagine a Blood Weaver unit just going ham and totally just ripping apart all your opponent's infantry, even more so than they already kind of can.
Yeah, Divine Inspiration is Signs Importance, but I believe you have to drop the lowest number. But definitely just a good quality of life smooths out that bell curve without a big change in the standard deviation. And Tactics Sacred Ward could be low-key amazing. I know a lot of Circle players have complained, to put it nicely, about the Druid's role shift, but getting some units again that can be immune to spells seems like a really good change.
Right. Yeah, especially again with Bloodweavers, oftentimes you're wanting to go and like lob AoEs at them. And sometimes those AoEs are like, you know, nukes that casters are throwing at them. And so making it just that much harder to actually target them and throw things their way helps that much more with their survivability.
Absolutely. So that's all the new models they introduced. Let's go ahead and dive into the opening proposed CID changes for everything else. So to start off, all War Beasts but the Gorax have Pathfinder. And in addition, there's a point reduction for the Warp Wolves. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Feral's going to 16, the Stalker's going to 17, Getarex to 19. And while not a point reduction, Loki might be available in the Tharn theme. I believe Jason Souls confirmed they were at least considering that.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the Feral, Stalker, and Getarex all went down by 2 points.
Which is just a huge quality of life change.
Yeah, it's a huge quality of life change. And that adds up quite a bit when you start playing kind of like Warp Wolf centric lists. You know, it's not uncommon in these early lists to have 3 Warp Wolves. And so that's just straight up, you know, 6 points off the bat that you might be saving. That could be a bunch of support. That could potentially be the difference between, you know, that spare 2 points you have and another like light War Beast. That 6 points can be, you know, quite a lot. It can be turning, you know, a lesser War Beast into another heavier War Beast. So 6 points is can be quite a huge deal for a lot of lists.
Absolutely. And I don't want to turn this into a dumpster fire, but if nothing else happens to Warp Wolves, do you think that's enough?
I would think so. I played most of the Warp Wolves anyways, even with the higher point costs. It's definitely nice that they're coming down in points. I think they're kind of on that edge of like, do I take it? It's kind of too expensive, but it's still kind of good. And now they're at a nice point cost where you don't feel like you have to be justifying taking them to yourself, where you just know like, yeah, it's going to be worth it for this amount of points.
Awesome. So they weren't the only War Beasts looked at. I believe the Goats got evaluated as well. The Gnarlhorn picked up an additional strength, just 1 strength. And the Shadowhorn's cost was changed to 11 points. The Animus was changed to Elusive, and he gains beat back on his fist. Does that sound right?
Yep. Yeah, and so the Gnarlhorn, while the +1 strength doesn't sound like a ton, one thing to remember is that he does have 3 initials and obviously 3 fury. And so that 1 strength propagated against his attacks can be an extra 6 damage dished out. And so that could reasonably be the difference between, you know, doing a good amount of damage to a heavy once he's buffed up and, you know, actually one rounding another heavy.
And the Shadowhorn, I know for a while Kaya 3 was using them, but I personally have never played against a Shadowhorn in Mark 3, so I really have no concept of what this thing does.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Shadowhorn does pretty much what we all imagine it does. It just gets in there, hops in. It does have a very high base threat. Base threat is 12 inches. And so there's a lot of ways to extend that to be pretty far threat, you know, farther than anything else is reasonably going to be. And it basically gains some quality of life changes. It no longer has to cast this Animus to get beat back. It just straight up has beat back on its fists. And now it has Elusive, which helps out since it has set defense, I believe. So it's a little bit hard to charge.
Absolutely. And if you do miss that charge, like we talked about, he can dodge away and really interrupt those plans. So one of the models I love the look at, Brennos, actually got some proposed changes. So his new cost is 15. His animus is Arcane Protections, which is basically, while within 10 inches, you can't channel or cast spells, which replaced Arcane Suppression. His bond to Morvana, I believe, is he can be used as an Arcanode. And conditioning to Rites of the Spring is D3 heal to command. Mm-hmm. Does that sum up what happened to him?
Yes. Yeah, I believe that's everything that happened to him. So I think these are all really pretty cool changes. I'm not sure if he's going to be, you know, suddenly this character beast that you're seeing all the time, because I think he does have still very niche uses, but I think he's really strong where you're going to bring him. We talked a little about like P Morvana or E Morvana earlier, where they're going to be bringing back stuff. And so using that D3 to heal, you know, if she's regrowing, say, four models, that could easily be, you know, 12 more boxes healed. With Arcane Suppression, his animus, Arcane Protections now, pretty much no spells are really longer than 10 inches, which pretty much means that if your caster casts it or if Breno casts it himself, you're pretty much immune to spells, right? Unless the caster, enemy caster, is straight up getting in there by themselves and casting it on you from 10 inches away. And so that can be really huge against Kricks. That can be really huge against just like straight up caster assassinations, where Morvana can just cast Arcane Suppression and know she's not going to get killed by spells via Arcanode anyways.
Absolutely. And I think I misspoke when I talked about Brennos. Arcane Protection just prevents channeling with 10 inches, not all spell casting. So hopefully Brennos can see some time on the table. Again, he's just such a gorgeous model. I'd just love to see him out there.
For sure.
Nuala gained a mini feat, which is basically the Reckoning from the Heretic. It's prey, and they can change target if they actually kill it. Does that sound correct?
I believe the way I understood the mini feat worked is she could just straight up change her prey target mid game. And so it's basically used to go and, you know, I go and I pray this Warjack. Okay. My opponent goes and runs it across the table to the other side. Okay. Mini feat was swapping it to this other target and we're going to go ham on them.
Awesome. Yeah. Like we said, the rules aren't fully released yet. That's not what I gathered when I read it, but what you said makes a lot more sense than what I had going in my head. That seems huge for them. It just really opens up a lot of options with their prey. Even when people hide a model in a unit back, so you kill the entire unit, but you don't get to roll prey, this gets around that as well.
Right. Yeah. I think so. I know that they are really wanting to differentiate the blood trackers from the Wolf Riders, which is why they're not really getting that reposition type of ability back. And I think this is a really nice trade, because oftentimes for trackers, it was really hard now to get a lot of use on them. Because if you wanted to get at your prey target and your opponent is kind of hiding them, you'd have to go really deep. Otherwise, you have to just kind of deal with being rat 6, pound 9. And now you have the ability to go and swap it to wherever it's needed to be.
Great. So you mentioned them. Wolf Riders are under heavy review. Proposed changes are mat 5, def 15. The champion was changed to mat 8, 7 points, and can be free in Devourer's Host. And they all picked up dodge. What do we think of Wolf Riders?
I think they still need probably a fair bit of work. I know cross-faction comparisons aren't the greatest to use, but if you compare them to, like, say, Raptors and Legion, their stat line is now pretty much the same, except Raptors have a higher rat, you know, 3 extra range on their gun, an extra POW on their gun. And so it still feels like they're not quite there. Granted, Wolf Riders have annoyance and dodge, which is nice, but I don't feel like their damage output, you know, is quite high enough to justify their cost.
You don't think they need more survivability? You think they need their damage output increased?
I do, yeah. That or maybe some changes of how the Wolf Riders operate. Back in Mark 1, they had an ability called like Hunting Howls, which basically meant that they had no command, that they could effectively run around as kind of like a unit of solos. And so I think that could be a really interesting idea for the Wolf Riders. So it doesn't necessarily have to be their damage output, I mean, or their survivability, but I think they just kind of need a different niche that they're filling.
Okay, I remember that in Mark 1. I really hope that doesn't come back, but that's fine. So Lord of the Feast, death powered, plus one strength, plus one armor for each corpse token. Overtake, grievous wounds, 7 points, and he lost Thresher. What do we think of the Lord of the Feast?
You know, it's a really interesting change because now he's kind of... They've kind of been phasing out what he does since the beginning of Mark 3, and now he's a very different... I wouldn't say very different, but he's fairly different from what he previously used to be. I think if you're able to load him up with corpses before he goes in, even from the Tharn theme or from the the new structure, then he can actually be just super, super tanky, especially considering that several of our casters have just like armor buff upkeeps you can throw on him. So then he's just this like def 12, arm 22 solo walking around in your backfield after he teleports in. And so I think the death powered of all the changes is a really neat change for him to make him both just super tanky and a credible melee threat.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have to see how he plays out, but I can definitely see him being a hard flank collapser, like you said, someone behind enemy lines where you have to devote something serious in order to deal with them.
Yeah, and he always was kind of that way since he was, you know, he had 8 boxes. He's a bit tanky, but the death powered, if you can load him up, definitely makes it so like you're forced to send in, you know, maybe even like a heavy just to go after Lord of the Feast.
Absolutely. So the White Mane picked up veteran leader Tharn. He also lost overtake and gained counter charge. Are we okay with that?
It seems kind of like a weird change to me. Veteran leader for all Tharn, including, I guess, the Chromax and Iona as well, which could be pretty neat since he'd be buffing up them. I think I'm okay with him losing the overtake since he never was really that great at doing it to begin with. And so having kind of like a counter charging like defensive model can be kind of nice, especially in like 2017, 2018, where a lot of the SR is about like holding down zones or protecting flags. Having something that you can kind of just baby guard an area with from those random chaff models they want to run into contest, I think can be really powerful.
Okay, and it's worth noting that when Dan and I are recording this, SR 2018 hasn't dropped yet. We're anxiously awaiting it, but it just hasn't happened yet. So the Blood Pack extended to range 12, arm 15, and they picked up Hogwild. And Hogwild, I believe, allows them to make a range attack, then perform the press forward order, so they can make a range attack and then charge. Is that right?
Yep, yeah, it's pretty much what the ability that they had back in Mark 2. Because that's exactly what they could do in Mark 2. It was an order where they could go and shoot and then run our charge. And I think that's effectively what Hogwild is. So I don't know. I think I'll have to see what other buffs or things come Blood Pack's way. They honestly weren't that great in Mark 2. And so just putting them back to where they used to be, I don't know if is really a significant enough change.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I always struggled with CID is I don't know the desired level for everything when it comes out of CID. Obviously, there's always going to be a best and there's always going to be a worst. Are we supposed to try to get everything to be tournament viable? I've never understood that fine line, if that makes sense.
Right, for sure.
So we saved the best for last, the glorious and illustrious Storm Raptor. Tom Guan says it doesn't need a buff, but everyone else thinks it might. Its proposed changes are 37 points. Pathfinder. Skyfire costs 1, and in addition, it just affects models within 10 inches. It's mat 6, and picked up the Deceptive Mobility, which was stolen from the Archangel and is basically reposition 3. So what do we think of the Storm Raptor?
I think a lot of the changes are really cool. A lot of people would like to see the points come down a little bit, so maybe that's something that can be worked through the CID. I think Deceptively Mobile and obviously the Mat 6 are kind of the winners through these abilities. Deceptively Mobile, I think, is ability that on paper just seems like reposition. But especially when you use it in melee, having experience from even like the Archangel, you know, you charge in 2-inch melee, you kill something, you reposition, you know, 3 inches away with that huge base or that large base from the thing you just killed, you're probably like 7 inches away from like the nearest thing to you. And so when you factor in like druids or Kruger or anything that's going to be able to create space, you could effectively go and just like kill something back up and not have anything really in range to threaten that storm raptor. And so I think Deceptively Mobile is a really cool ability to go and add on to it, especially when you take into consideration that it has disruption on its weapon. So you may not even have to kill something. You could go and just beat up on a couple things, back up, maybe push them a little bit, and they could be like 8 inches away from you and not actually able to do anything about it.
How do you feel about the Storm Raptor's range presence? A lot of Circle players have complained that if they're going to cast Skyfire, reload, then they can't fully boost their range attacks.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. But it's also a range 14 gun, so you're not necessarily always going to be utilizing Skyfire anyways. But I mean, that's definitely a fair thing to bring up. But remember also, like, your casters can bring in it, can cast it. So like little Una 1 can cast it. Your just straight up like Warlock can cast it as well. So they can also just do that to be buffing up your Storm Raptor.
I think the Storm Raptor's range 12, but I mean, with Deceptively Mobile, you can be 15 inches away from whatever you shot, which is a respectable distance for sure. So the Storm Raptor you think is okay, maybe just a little high in points. Would you like to say closer to like the 34, 35 mark that we saw the Victor and the Conquest drop to?
I wouldn't say 34, but I could definitely see like 35, 36.
Okay.
But
we'll have to see where it lands out. I am most excited about the Storm Raptor to because it really is just a gorgeous model. If you haven't seen one on the table, it's majestic, to say nothing else.
Oh yeah, it's a beautiful model.
So that wraps up the Circle CID. Dan, what was your favorite model that got tossed in there?
Funnily enough, I definitely think just the structure is gonna be my favorite model that got thrown in there. I'm definitely hyped about it.
So that wraps up all the proposed Circle CID notes that I have. Do you think we missed anything, Dan?
No, I think we covered just about everything.
So what is your hype level on a 1 to 10 scale about the proposed changes?
I'm definitely trying to save my hype a little bit, just so I can see what the CID is and then get more hyped then. I would say right now I'm about maybe a 6-7. Feeling good about the changes, but I'm not crazy hyped about it.
I know you're really excited about the Well of Orbos. Was there another model, maybe a just revisited model, maybe one of the other new things that really caught your eye?
Definitely Nuala, I'd say. I think the Reckoning to be able to change prey wherever you want to be would be, you know, as obviously a huge quality of life shift for them, but also kind of just really powerful since, you know, your opponent is going to have to start thinking where they're putting their models in relation to the blood trackers, because especially if you're using a caster that can buff their damage, if they put something they value too close to it, it's very possible they're just going to go over and delete that model.
Absolutely. That's a good point. You can just surgically remove something if an opponent screws up with that. So I'm excited for the Circle CID to come live. The one thing I'll say, no disrespect to anyone in the Circle Facebook group, is I strongly encourage you to stay positive during the CID processes. Rules change multiple times a week. Sometimes the devs have made it clear that they do actually listen to the things you say. So again, just because something you don't love happened, let's try to stay positive, give feedback, try to give some game examples of why your change is the best thing ever, instead of just turning things into a dumpster fire. Dan, do you have any upcoming national events, or where can we see you next?
I don't have any plan, but I'm definitely looking at the moment. I might go to Gen Con. Otherwise, I haven't decided, but I definitely have plans to go at least to one other qualifier aside from just the Phoenix Open here in Arizona.
Absolutely, and I'll be out at the Phoenix Open, so if you want to see Dan and I, you can definitely catch us there. Awesome. I believe that's the second week of September. You can check out on our Facebook for the full information. Again, that's the Phoenix Open. So Dan, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh yeah, of course.
That wraps up today's episode of Tangential with Sung Su. Be sure to follow me on Facebook at CEO Wargaming to stay up to date with all my content. You can also find me on Twitter at Sung Su. I'd love to hear from everyone, good, bad, or otherwise. I'd like to thank Dan for coming on the show. Also, Muzon Minis for hosting all my podcast adventures. I hope this podcast was educational, entertaining, and inspiring. Till next time, cheers.